Welcome to the DNA Talks podcast, where we take on the mission of unlocking the code of your genetics. This season is all about you, upgrading your health, not just on the surface, but down to the root cause. Join us as your clinicians at the DNA Company investigate your DNA and beyond. The intention of this podcast is to enhance your lifestyle by changing what is in your control. This does not substitute the medical advice given by your personal doctor, therapist, and other healthcare professionals.
Hello and good day, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us again for another episode of the DNA Talks podcast. I'm Dr. Lara Varden, and I am an in-house clinician for the DNA Company, and so happy to be here with you today. And it is also my deep pleasure to welcome our guest today, Dr. Tim Jackson. Dr. Jackson is a doctor of physical therapy and orthopedic rehabilitation and a functional medicine provider. He holds a bachelor's of science degree in health science and chemistry from Wake Forest University. He serves clients in over 15 countries throughout his telehealth practice at www.healyourbody.org and has helped thousands over the last 8 years. Dr. Jackson is the creator of the Heal Your Hormones Bootcamp for neurosurgeon Dr. Jack Cruz for his membership community and has contributed to the book Diagnostic Testing in Functional Medicine by Amir Rosick. He has been featured in the Huffington Post, the Bulletproof Executive, and Ben Greenfield Fitness podcasts on multiple health and medical summits and in two health documentaries. He has presented to the Silicon Valley Health Institute and the Indian Association of Functional Medicine. Dr. Tim hosts the Boss Body podcast. Great podcast, by the way. Definitely recommend it. He also serves on the medical advisory board for Wellness Mama, a site with several million annual visitors. Dr. Jackson is available to comment on various functional medicine and wellness-related topics such as digestive health, energy and fatigue, autoimmune disorders, and mold toxicity. So thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to discuss these wonderful, interesting things with you today.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Lara.
Oh, thank you. And I got the immense pleasure to have a conversation with you this past week. And I find your story very fascinating. One of those things, like many of us, the healer going through a tumultuous time to really learn, grow, and heal ourselves in using many modalities to then turn around and to teach others. And I would like you to share some of your background, your genesis story on how you got to where you are today with our listeners.
Yeah, so I went to undergrad at Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And I took all the pre-med requirements to go to a traditional MD program. Wasn't sure if I wanted to go to dental school or an MD program. And then as I was doing my preceptorships at the medical school, some of the residents, after getting to know them, one day they pulled me aside and they said, "You're definitely smart enough to go to an MD program, but you're not going to be happy. You're not going to learn about any of the stuff that you're interested in. And just get a ticket to play the game," meaning just get a doctorate in a healthcare related field or a medical field and put the functional medicine spin or twist on it. And so that, coupled with the fact that I had what I now know to be an unnecessary jaw surgery my senior year in undergrad, where they broke both my maxilla and my mandible, so upper and lower jaw, and put in a bunch of screws. And I was very, very sick. I went from leg pressing over 500 pounds to barely being able to walk. And I was having all sorts of reactions to the anesthesia, the metals in my mouth, et cetera. And so that was a huge awakening that, okay, allopathic medicine doesn't have all the answers. It doesn't even have half the answers. I mean, I'm very thankful for, you know, emergency medicine personnel. I think they all do a great job, and trauma surgeons, et cetera. But outside of that, I realized that, you know, we don't do such a good job in the allopathic community of healing people. So I did traditional orthopedics right out of my doctorate program for about 2 years. And then I joined a nurse practitioner in her practice and started doing functional medicine. I would travel a few places and train with different MDs and DOs in functional medicine. And then I just kept, you know, getting healthier and healthier along the way. And, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, well, functional medicine, you know, it's a never ending wheel. It's because we live in such a toxic world and we have so many stressors and traumas. It's not that we go looking for problems. It's just we treat what we find, we address what we find. And so that's basically how I ended up here.
So what did you find as your aha moment when you were going through school? You know, like someone said to you, I don't think you would be very happy, you know, going the MD route. What made you choose Doctor of Physical Therapy? And how has that helped inform you to be in this functional medicine world?
So I was going to get a doctorate in psychology. I took about 10 psychology courses, but I realized, you know, you don't get to dissect cadavers. And I was very spoiled in undergrad. There's only 5 undergrad institutions in the U.S. where you can dissect a human cadaver in undergrad. And so I was able to do that. And then I had good enough grades to become a TA. So I actually dissected 2 cadavers before I got out of undergrad. And I knew I had to, you know, pick a field, but I felt like if I picked, say, optometry, I was really limited to the eye. And we can talk about the nutrition of the eye and epigenetics and how that influences eye health, but there's not a lot of other things that can be done. And a doctor of physical therapy, it's very similar to a doctor of chiropractic. We do joint mobilizations, manipulation, soft tissue treatments, class 4 lasers, dry needling. And so that I felt like gave me the best background in terms of nutrition, pathophysiology, cellular molecular biology. So I minored in chemistry, and I also took 4 semesters of biology, comparative physiology, human physiology, cellular molecular biology, biochemistry. And so all of those things helped me. And then all the things that I thought were just reinforced when I got out of school and started practicing. So, you know, I remember several people having frozen shoulder, and a common cause of frozen shoulder where the capsule around the glenohumeral joint, it tightens down, it gets adhesions, and you can't really flex your arm. And typically rehab takes at least 3, sometimes up to 6 months. But one of the most common causes of that is subclinical hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And so I can mobilize your shoulder all day long till the cows come home, and I'll see marginal improvements at best if we don't address the thyroid. And then we know the thyroid is very intimately connected to the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. So if we give someone thyroid medication and they have low cortisol, they can go into AFib or have tachycardia and things like that. So it's really, as cliche as it sounds, it's a system of systems. And we have to, the question I always ask myself is, what can I do to make everything else work better? And, you know, some of the things I found were, okay, mitochondrial health, right? You know, the better your mitochondria work, the better every system in your body is going to work. And sleep disordered breathing. So even, you know, functional medicine is advanced as much as it has, but if you're treating all these issues and you're barely seeing results, a significant portion of the population has sleep disordered breathing because we don't breastfeed long enough. We don't eat crunchy foods early enough. And there's a bioanthropological lab in Paris where she's analyzed skulls from, you know, a few hundred years ago up until present time. And we've become more vertical growers than horizontal growers. And so the width of the upper jaw is critical. If you look at the best athletes and even the people we find the most attractive, typically they have very wide upper jaws and it tapers down to the mandible, the lower jaw. So when you measure from 3 to 14, optimal width is 40 to 42 millimeters. Once in a while, you can get someone to 44 millimeters. But, you know, if you go to a traditional allopathic doctor and even have a sleep study done in a hospital, they might see that your O2 sats go down to 94% and they'll say, yep, that's fine. That's not fine. So, and that's just telling you what's in the blood, right? It doesn't even mean it's getting into the cell for oxidative phosphorylation, electron transport chain, those things. And so all of those things, all of that is to say that breathing is incredibly important, not just breath work, but correcting sleep disordered breathing. And sometimes that involves expanding the upper jaw. Sometimes it involves addressing food sensitivities or allergies or environmental sensitivities or allergies, because those things can decrease nasal patency. So when I sleep now, I sleep with a little piece of silicone in each nose. It's a little device that keeps the paranasal sinuses or nasal passages open, and I'm better able to fully oxygenate my body.
And that's amazing. I love how, you know, using these little devices to help optimize that. I know I personally use mouth tape to help not be a mouth breather at night, and it has helped with soft snoring and other things that I would do. I haven't actually looked into any nasal expanders like that. How comfortable is that? Did it take you a little bit to get used to?
It didn't take me, but you know, I'm the kind of person, if you told me to eat horse manure and it would boost my mitochondrial health, I would do it. I wouldn't even ask questions. So I'm probably not the best judge on that. My mom uses it, and she tells me it's a little bit uncomfortable. And so I'm always asking her, did you wear your nasal mutes? So there's several different devices out there, and they're only like $15 to $20. Nasal mutes, M-U-T-E-S. There's another one called nasal dilator from a company called Max. The nasal dilator is a little more comfortable than the nasal mutes, but you know, it's a very simple solution. And you know, to your point about the mouth taping, I'm glad people are becoming aware of breath work and how important it is. But a lot of times, if you have people, and there's videos circulating on social media where there's a guy who put this like clear tape across his mouth, but he doesn't have good nasal patency. So you can see like he's trying to pull the tape off while he's sleeping. So I'm glad people are becoming aware, but there are some precautions, and you need to make sure that you're getting sufficient oxygen through the nose. And then you may need what's called myofunctional therapy, where you train the muscles of the jaw and the tongue, because the resting position of the tongue has a direct influence on the parasympathetic nervous system. And also if the posterior, the back muscles on the tongue, if they're weak, the tongue will start to slide down the trachea, and that's when you choke and can't breathe.
Right. And I have several clients who have to use CPAP machines, which obviously, you know, kind of takes over as far as that positive pressure, you know, giving that, and you wouldn't be using mouth tape or any of these other devices outside of that. But it doesn't mean that you have to necessarily be on a CPAP the rest of your life, because actually, many years ago, after my car accident and a lot of the medications, I had sleep apnea. I did have to use a CPAP machine, but changing my diet, losing the weight, you know, getting in better shape off of the medications, obviously I don't have to use that anymore, which has been lovely. So the nice thing is, you know, realizing that our bodies are in a natural healing state, we just have to start giving it the tools it needs to heal. And, you know, that if we do these things to be able to get better sleep, to heal better, I mean, it's kind of like a snowball rolling downhill. You get the momentum once it gets going, and then you can be on this wonderful healing path. These are the kinds of things, the information, these devices, working with people like yourself to be able to get that snowball rolling, you know, to get it going and to get yourself to allow your body to do what it naturally should be doing. And that's
it's interesting you use that analogy of the snowball, because there's a good book. Actually, I have it right here. It's called 6 Foot Tiger, 3 Foot Cage.
Who wrote that?
It's Dr. Felix Lau.
Oh, nice.
And there's a good diagram in there where it's literally a guy pushing a boulder uphill. And Dr. Lau says, until you fix your sleep disordered breathing, everything in life is going to feel like pushing a boulder uphill. Simple everyday task. And, you know, there's a lot of case studies in there. It's never too late, by the way. A lot of people think, okay, I'm an adult, I'm 35 or 45, I can't expand my upper jaw. That's not true. I mean, in some cases, select cases, it is. But most of the time, it can be expanded if that's what's needed. But some people have such severe oxygen debt. There's one case study in the book where the guy, you know, he used the correct oral appliance and did the correct myofunctional therapy and worked on nasal patency, but it took him 5 years to really notice a significant difference because I think he was in his 50s or maybe early 60s. His body had such a severe oxygen debt from all those years. And if you think about it, not only does it increases your risk of pretty much every health disorder known to man, strokes, heart attacks, low libido, enuresis or wetting the bed, erectile dysfunction in men, low hormones in men and women, heart attacks, strokes, you know, all those things like I mentioned. But not only that, you're not getting deep sleep. And so that's when we have our anabolic potential the greatest. That's when we repair tissues and regenerate. So you're not getting the deep sleep, you're not detoxifying, and your risk for every health disorder known to man goes up.
Speaking of detoxifying, that is a major area in our DNA 360 reports that we cover, that we look into, is the anti-inflammatory profile, which covers actually four major detoxification pathways. We look at the glucuronidation pathway, we focus more on hormones, but methylation, glutathione conjugation, and antioxidation that happens in the mitochondria for mitochondria health and functioning, specifically SOD2 and the GPX genes. And they are very tightly associated with someone's ability to sleep. You know, I mentioned to clients about having a toxic bucket, that everyone has a bucket that is constantly getting filled with endogenous toxins, meaning toxins that we have inside our body that are made through metabolic processes, and that includes hormone metabolites. Then we also have exogenous toxins, toxins outside of the body that we take in through our air, our food, our water, including glyphosate, mold toxicity, all of these other insults. And if we are not emptying that bucket faster than it's getting filled, eventually that bucket is going to overflow. When it overflows, that is when we have these symptoms. This is when we have these chronic conditions or autoimmune issues. Our body is screaming at us, telling us, hey, you know, we've got to do something about this. We need to, number one, eliminate or lessen the toxic load coming in, but also to support these detox pathways. So working in that vein, because it is so important to be able to sleep well in order to heal, which I think is absolutely foundational for good health, then looking at and considering that we have to keep backing up, looking at root causes. Because if we're having sleep issues, one, we have to look at, you know, how's our brain working? What's our processes and use techniques to help us sleep? But a lot of times it is a toxic load. So we can try to get sleep, but if the toxic load is still there, we're not going to get good sleep. So let's back it up some more. Toxic load. In the bio and some of the work that you did, you deal with mold toxicity. You deal with other toxins in the system causing these problems and how it affects the endocrine system, our hormones. So I would like to get your perspective on the thousands of clients you have helped over the years and like that guide that you created on how to heal your hormones and how that's associated with toxicity and what do we do about it?
Yeah, so, you know, different types of toxins are going to affect the body to varying degrees. And obviously our epigenetics play a role, but with things like mycotoxins, so there's, one or two things that caused me to stop dead in my tracks and say, okay, we need to reevaluate. So when I see mold toxicity, I know that the gut microbiome is not really going to improve. Hormonal health won't really improve. It may get worse. So if you administer exogenous hormones to someone who has mold toxicity, they will almost always get worse, especially in men, because the more inflamed you are, at least for guys, the more the aromatase enzyme is active. So you're converting more testosterone into estrogen. The more estrogen dominant you are, the more it's going to slow down your metabolism. The more your metabolism is slowed down, the harder it's going to be to detoxify. So it's a vicious cycle there. But mold specifically lowers a hormone called alpha MSH, which is alpha melanocyte stimulating hormone. And that hormone is very important. Most people know it for making us tan. And while that can be important, what's even more important is its anti-inflammatory properties. So it has the ability to quell inflammation and decrease inflammatory cytokines. And that hormone is lowered by mold. In addition, one common place that mold and mycotoxins colonize in the body is the paranasal sinuses. So that's not far from the neurons, you know, in the frontal lobe there. So it can have both direct and indirect effects on hormonal health. In addition, it basically, not completely, but you can think of it as shutting down the mitochondria. Okay. And so we need the mitochondria to detoxify, but if they're shut down because you have mycotoxicosis or mold toxins, then you have to address that before you can achieve any sort of hormonal balance. And so I would say, you know, when you're looking at things like mold toxicity, toxins have to be addressed in a certain order based on their molecular weight. So if someone has heavy metal toxicity and mold toxicity, you go after the mold first. I learned that the hard way. I got like 18 chelation IVs like 15, 16 years ago, and it barely budged. I don't even know if it did budge my numbers. And that's because I had mycotoxins, but this was before. I didn't learn about mycotoxins until about 3 years after that. And so, you know, if you're listening or viewing the podcast, definitely, you know, work with someone knowledgeable in how to get these things out of the body. It's not as simple as binding them up and pooping or peeing them out. We have to rehabilitate the cell membranes. So cell membranes are important for cells to be able to talk to one another. And if your cells can't talk to one another, then your tissues don't work well, your organs don't work well, and your organ systems don't work well. And so working on cell membrane health, supplementing with things like glutathione, because every toxin we're exposed to uses up a little bit of glutathione. When we're under any sort of stressor, doesn't matter what the stressor is, because the body really only has, you know, one or two stress responses, it's going to create havoc in the body. I would say with, you know, things like glutathione, that can be very, very helpful depending on your epigenetics, but it, you know, it gets bile moving. And if you don't have good bile production and flow, you can't detoxify. And glutathione is also an immune modulator. And that plays a particularly important role in hormonal health because inflammation will alter hormones. I'll give you another example besides the mold toxicity. Let's say you have some endocrine disrupting chemicals and gut dysbiosis. Well, that's going to create inflammation in the body. Well, how do you calm down inflammation? The adrenal medulla produces cortisol. And so the more inflammatory stressors you have internally and externally that you're being exposed to, the more derailed your hormonal levels and endocrine status will be. And so anything, we have our cholesterol that gets converted into pregnenolone. And so that pregnenolone goes on to produce all of our steroid hormones. And so pregnenolone steel, which is kind of a misnomer, but we'll call it that for now. Pregnenolone steel, that will take your cortisol and start using it up. And that leaves less raw material to go towards your sex hormones.
When people, if they have issues, heavy metals, or they're, say they don't even realize that they have any toxicities at all. And I know that a lot of clients that I work with, a lot of the women are going through this perimenopause, menopause, or their postmenopausal. And I'm right there too. I'm actually going through this myself, haven't pulled the trigger on any hormone replacement therapy. But, you know, there are a handful that say, oh yeah, the hormones, fantastic, changed my life, love it. Others, they're like, no, this actually has caused some issues. So it's, I personally always look at toxic loads. What are your experiences? What have you been exposed to? And I will tell you, more often than not, people are exposed to mold, have lived in a moldy home, even if it was when they were a child. You know, if there was enough exposure, you know, it does stay in the system unless it gets evicted and cleared out. And especially with so many homes, I'm all over the country, especially here in the Northeast where I happen to live, a lot of water damaged homes. Don't think that, oh, well, you know, there was a leak in here, I'll be fine. Just kind of wipe it up with some bleach and stuff. Please don't do that. You know, have a company or something do the correct mitigation and cleaning. But this, again, if it's not taken care of, will cause problems down the road. Again, that toxic bucket getting filled, and where is it going to present? How is it going to present for you, the listener? And this is where looking at the genes can really come into play to say, where are my weak spots? You know, where am I finding where my inflammation is going to rear its head in some, you know, pathophysiological way, you know, in some symptoms that you're actually dealing with. And I think that it's really important, you know, if you are having issues with hormones, that you assess toxins, not just taking the test, because yes, having these the objective tests are very important to be able to see what the actual levels and things are, but to actually think about what are my symptoms, but also thinking in your past history, even current, what are you currently being exposed to? If you've got a leaky window and you're seeing some black mold, which happens to be Stachybotrys atria, which is a very nasty mold species, that's an issue, or a leak underneath the sink, you are being exposed to mold toxins. And this needs to be taken seriously. I like the fact of how you were saying about supporting the body, you know, with the glutathione conjugation pathway and glutathione. But I would be careful for listeners to just, you know, go to the store and order, you know, or pick up some liposomal glutathione. Because again, based on the genes, especially with the pathway that we look at, your GST genes, if someone doesn't have any copies of their GSTT1 or GSTM1, glutathione may not be their friend. They may not get the kind of benefits from it. You know, they might be a candidate to have the precursors supporting that pathway, things like N-acetylcysteine, selenium, you know, maybe milk thistle or alpha lipoic acid, things like this. It's definitely be an advocate for your own health, but also have the knowledge of looking into things, getting these tests done, tapping into the knowledge of a professional who has seen it, you know, like you, Dr. Tim, that you've seen all of these patients, you know the nuances, and then also looking into the DNA for that, because that is your blueprint. And, you know, with the epigenetics of that, how are your genes being expressed? So diving into that a little bit, what have you found when it comes to mold toxicity and hormone health? You've talked about how the genes and certain hormones are being dysregulated with that. So you said about supporting the detox pathway. But what other things do you generally look at when someone is starting to heal, like to continue that and where you can navigate from there?
From an epigenetic standpoint or just the total whole body?
Well, first as an epigenetic standpoint and then zooming out in whole body.
Yeah. So, I mean, I look at, you know, groups of polymorphisms, not just one isolated polymorphism and the copy number variant, things of that nature. But I want to see, okay, do they have hiccups in the glutathione pathway? Do they need supplemental glutathione? Have they taken it before? How did they do then? Have they taken NAC before? Personally, I don't do well at all with NAC. And I would have to pull up my genetics report again to look at it. But selenium, I'm a big fan of selenium, supporting it with that. And, you know, going back to my point about what can we do to make everything else work better? So one of those things, when we look at both the environment and our bodies, our internal terrain, hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, and nitrogen is the hierarchy of elements. And so when we add hydrogen to the body, like in the form of molecular hydrogen, which has become popular in the past 4 or 5 years, I have a machine in the other room where I breathe the gas for about 30 minutes a day, and then I drink the water once or twice a day. It's a small enough molecule. It can get into the mitochondria and it can help stimulate repairs, but also stimulate mitochondrial biogenesis or the production of new mitochondria. And so that can help with things like mold toxicity, inflammation, because we have to remember the mitochondrial DNA is not protected by those big bulky histone proteins like our nuclear DNA is. And so the mitochondria can get damaged very easily. Things like molecular hydrogen will help facilitate detoxification. And one important point I wanted to make is that inflammation and detoxification are inversely related. So the more inflamed we are, the less capable we are of detoxifying. So the first step in detoxifying is actually mitigating inflammation. And we obviously don't want it or zero inflammation. We want a balanced inflammatory response. And glutathione helps to do that by a lot of people are stuck in a T helper 2, TH2 dominant state. And glutathione helps to move it back towards the middle where there's sort of a dynamic equilibrium where it can slide back and forth. The TH1 is how we fight intracellular pathogens. But glutathione also has some potent antiviral properties. So I look at those polymorphisms. I also look at, you know, the methylation pathways. B12 methylfolate, for example, plays a role in, you know, it's a combination of over 200 biochemical reactions. So it plays a role in CD4, CD8, T helper and T suppressor immune cells. So if we're not methylating, it's going to affect our immune system, our ability to detoxify, our ability to metabolize hormones. We have to methylate our estrogens to get rid of them. It can also play a role in neurological health, the formation of myelin, that fatty sheath coating that hangs out around our nerves and allows the nerve impulses to travel faster. So I want to look at the methylation pathways. I want to look at the inflammatory cytokine pathways. You know, are you more prone to having elevated interleukin-6, tumor necrosis factor alpha, interleukin-1 beta? Because all of those will cause an elevation, especially IL-6, will cause an elevation in C-reactive protein. And we know inflammation is at the root of every chronic disorder. And so we can look at predispositions to inflammation. But stepping out of the epigenetics, because we could look at, you know, different epigenetic components, and they're extremely important. I think the testing is great because it's a one-time deal, right? You know, your expressions may change, but, you know, your copy, the number of copies, whether you're heterozygous or homozygous or mild, moderate, whatever, optimal, suboptimal, however you want to look at it. But that all plays a role. And so looking at things like the vagus nerve. And so we have two aspects to our autonomic or automatic nervous system, the fight or flight and the rest and digest. And most of us are in too much of a fight or flight. The rest and digest, that's where all of our healing is done. So when we don't have good parasympathetic tone, which is the rest and digest system, we're more inflamed. And when we stimulate the vagus nerve, which this device, I'll just show you right here, you can apply it to the vagus nerve here, and that activates something called the anti-inflammatory reflex. And so the vagus nerve, it has its own reflex that controls inflammation. And so the Cleveland Clinic, I think they're still doing it, but implanted vagus nerve stimulators, and they're curing crazy things. But obviously, you know, that's a very invasive procedure, but something like this, a device you can apply on your neck to stimulate the vagus nerve, helps to facilitate sleep. So we're going to detoxify. We're going to be less inflamed because we got more deep sleep, but it's also going to directly lower inflammation. So I look at things that affect the inflammatory cycle and cascade. I look at detoxification ability. You know, do you have a ton of hiccups in COMT or COMT? Are you getting stressed out easily? You know, it's an evolutionary trade-off where people with COMT, we have higher IQs, but if I get ticked off, then, you know, I'm probably not going to get out of that bad mood for the rest of the day. You know, it's just metabolizing, but, you know, there's ways around that. But obviously you want to control the stress response, because the more fight or flight you're in, the more inflamed you're going to be. And the more inflamed you are, the less able you are to detoxify. So it's all so connected. You know, if we wrote it all down, we would have arrows going so many different ways, it would make us dizzy.
If I can interject there, for our audience who is just listening to the podcast, would you mind please verbalizing the device that you were showing on the video and that you were using and putting up to your neck where the vagus nerve is? Can you tell us what that is, please?
Yeah, so this device is called the Hoolest, H-O-O-L-E-S-T, and this is the Prime. There's two different versions. It was developed by, I think he's a doctor of biomedical engineering. And I've tried several vagus nerve stimulation devices. This is the only one I found that really moved the needle. Literally, there's no monthly subscription. It's a one-time purchase. You pull it out of the box. You have these little silicone areas that slide into there. And there's some conducting gel you can put on there if you want. You can apply it here on the left side, just below the ear. And so right there, and you know, it's going to feel, you're going to feel something. It shouldn't be painful, might be mildly uncomfortable, but you only do it for about 2 to 4 minutes. You can do it as many times a day as you need, 3, 4, 5 times a day. Some people will say, you know, when they use it, they immediately feel like they need to go to lay down and sleep. And that's a good thing. So then, you know, to maybe not use it as much during the day, and use it before bed. But this device, you know, it has the ability, when we talk about what can we do to make everything else work better, obviously the vagus nerve is going to help us balance our autonomic sympathetic versus parasympathetic systems. And that's going to help us control inflammation and also detoxification, because they're so intimately connected.
Is that like an electrostimulation device? Is that what that is? Or
so it's not an eSTIM device. Well, I mean, it may be like a derivative of it, but I don't think they categorize it as eSTIM. And it has this model has five different settings on it. And you can stimulate not just the vagus nerve, you can do the trigeminal nerve and the median nerve for other reasons. But I only use it for the vagus nerve. And it's different hertz. So there are some that are pulsed. I like to do the continuous. So pulse would mean, for example, 3 seconds on, 3 seconds off, 3 seconds on, 3 seconds off. I like to do continuous. I find that for me, it's more effective. But there are other devices that work by clipping things on the ear and stimulating. I have an actual eSTIM unit where I put a clip here. and a clip on the earlobe, and I have certain settings that I've researched that can stimulate the vagus nerve. That device, if you're using a traditional eSTIM device, typically you need to do a minimum of 30 minutes, usually an hour. This is 2 to 4 minutes, 2 to 3 times a day.
Thank you for that information. It's always something that can help, especially to help activate that vagus nerve. Dr. Stephen Porges has done research for vagal tone. And there are actually some free things people can do to activate the vagus nerve. Vagus meaning the wandering nerve. It is the longest of the cranial nerves that integrate into several organs. And for audience out there, ways to activate your vagus nerve that you can do anytime: gargling, humming, singing, also doing fasting, different things like meditation, obviously deep breathing, even cold showers. And when you actually work with someone, acupuncture helps. So, you know, are there any other things that you want to add to that, that people could do to help activate their vagus nerve?
Cold face plunges are really good because, I mean, I know for myself, I'm not going to go get in a 34 degree cold plunge tub, even though I know scientifically and medically the benefits. So the cold face plunges, it activates the mammalian dive reflex, which feeds into the parasympathetic nervous system as well. And supposedly it's good for the skin as well. And it's much less cleanup. Like, you know, you don't have to go outside. You don't have to, you know, do all these crazy things. So it's easier for me to get people to buy in. Then once they experience some wins with that, then I say, hey, okay, if you want to take it to another level, then, you know, you can look into cold plunging, which is very different from a cryo chamber or cryotherapy chamber. I had on my podcast, Dr. Tom Seeger, co-developer and co-founder of the Morasco, the cold plunge tub that's made out of ceramic and it's grounded and no non-native EMFs or anything like that. And so he talks about the differences between, you know, getting in a cryotherapy chamber, which I've done 4 or 5 sessions in. And I think it has benefits, but not to the extent that a cold tub does. The cold showers, according to him, they're good at raising norepinephrine, but not enough to necessarily activate dopamine, norepinephrine converts into dopamine, but you have to have vitamin C, copper, and some other cofactors. I would say the cold face plunges can be helpful. The tinge unit on the ear, the gargling, the humming, the singing, the gum chewing. In my experience, if your vagus nerve is already fairly healthy, those can help. If you're dealing with someone who's has a chronic issue or multiple chronic issues, you need to step it up to something like this. And I have no financial connection to this company, but I do like to share things that I found that work because I've tried plenty that don't. And they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So there's really no risk on your part. And that's what got me to buy in. Plus a colleague of mine, who's both a chiropractor and a nurse practitioner, he treats a lot of patients with traumatic brain injuries, concussion, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And when I messaged him about it, because I'd seen 1 or 2 ads, and I said, hey, have you seen this device? He said, seen it. I've been using it in the clinic for like 2 months. And I said, do you like it? And he said, yeah, I'm getting great results. I use it on myself, my wife, my kids. And so the vagus nerve, if we can get in more of a parasympathetic state, it's going to help. And there's lots of things we can do to achieve that. But when I was speaking with someone yesterday, we were talking about how it's much easier, like if you're working a traditional office job, just to pull this out. Like let's say you're really shy and you really conscious of what people are thinking. You know, take it in your pocket. It fits in your pocket. Take it to your bathroom break. Apply it there for 2 to 3 minutes, 2 to 4 minutes, and then you're good for 3 or 4 hours. And so it's easier to get people to buy in my experience.
Mm-hmm. So what would a protocol be? You know, you're saying use it 2 to 3 minutes, but like once a day, a few times a day? What does that look like? Daily, forevermore type of thing?
Yeah, so I would say it's kind of like, you know, with detoxification. You know, a lot of people are promoting juice cleanses and everything, and maybe in a few cases they're appropriate, but we're never going to stop being exposed to toxins. So we have to do things that are sustainable. And so that involves taking your detoxification pathways back to a physiological level, not a super physiological level. And occasionally that's appropriate, but I would use it a minimum of twice a day. And I think everyone could stand to benefit. You know, I don't know if there are any absolute contraindications. I have metal in my mouth from the jaw surgery that I had. And, you know, I'm fine using it. There are likely some CYA statements on the company's website. But unless you've had like a hemorrhagic stroke or you have a shunt in, then there shouldn't be any contraindications with it. And in terms of, you know, how long to use it, I would say, I mean, because once you buy it, you got it, right? You don't have to buy it again and again like a supplement, which, I mean, they're necessary. But if I can use a device that replaces 5 or 6 supplements and I already paid for it, then I'm going to use it 3 times a day, every day.
And I do want to mention that, I mean, just in my own thoughts, that would be in conjunction with doing deep breathing, singing, humming, you know, doing these other things, because, you know, having a multimodal approach is, I think, more beneficial, not to mention that just deep breathing is free. You can do it anywhere. Yeah. And you know, people need to get more oxygen into their system, and which actually helps to support the methylation pathway, which helps in so many different ways. I'm definitely a proponent into activating that parasympathetic nervous system. Put yourself in that healing state, that natural state your body wants and is in. We just have to get out of its way, let it do its job. Mm-hmm. Actually, another interesting thing that you had mentioned with EMFs, you know, it doesn't have the EMFs, and something that I work with, because I lived in a moldy house for 7 years and I've been exposed. I mean, the house I grew up in had mold, and, you know, I dealt with a lot of the issues of that, you know, nosebleeds and headaches and migraines and so many different things. But I was more recently, like within the last few years, made aware of EMF exposures and mold, that it actually can create hypersensitivity, can incite parasites, and, you know, a whole host of issues that can then turn around and affect our cortisol levels, our hormone levels, you know, everything else. So, and unfortunately with our, you know, technology today, we are absolutely inundated with EMF exposures, you know, 5G and you know, all the equipment that we're on right now, Bluetooth and everything else. What does it look like for you when you work with clients, you know, to start mitigating, you know, these exposures to help them heal, you know, as well as, you know, helping support the detox pathways, you know, and using these types of devices. How do you deal with that? And what do you find?
Yeah. So, well, number one, we're all exposed to way too many non-native EMFs. So to be clear, you know, the Schumann resonance, like if we go sleep on the ground outside, that's the Schumann resonance. It adds electrons to the body. It's very anti-inflammatory. It makes the blood less viscous, so it increases perfusion circulation. But in terms of remediation or mitigating EMFs, distance. So the inverse square law, which basically just means the further away a device is that's emitting these non-native EMFs from our bodies, the better off we're going to be. That's one thing. Now there are paints that you can get for your walls that you, you know, you can paint, and it helps to mitigate the EMF levels. I have some filters. They're called green wave filters, I think, I learned about them from Dave Asprey like 9 or 10 years ago. You plug them into the wall sockets, and I have them like 3 or 4 of them around the house. That decreases the amount of dirty electricity because, yeah, 5G is bad, Wi-Fi is bad, but you can have, like, let's put those aside for a second. You can have a house that wasn't wired correctly, and the electrical density is too concentrated in an area. And that, I had a colleague, she's a nutritionist, and she and her husband woke up during the middle of the night, and the socket behind their bed, there was smoke emanating from it. And so, you know, they obviously remediated that, corrected that. But there's not, and this touches on the mold as well, housing contractors, they get away with a lot because of one thing I learned after the pharmaceutical companies, the next industry that donates the most amount of money to politicians is homeowners insurance companies, because they don't have to, they don't want to pay for mold remediation. And along the same lines, if you look at like just down the street from here, you know, they put up the framework for a few new houses. Well, they may not come back to that job site for 2, 3, even 4 weeks. In the meantime, it's raining. So you're already building a structure that has mold growth on it. And then we wonder why we don't feel well. But now there are at least one, maybe two companies in the United States where, like, basically you work with them to design your house, and then all the material gets shipped and it gets constructed in one day. So it's prefabricated, but, you know, it's not getting exposed to moisture and mold. And then the EMFs, the mold is threatened by EMFs. So research by Dr. Dietrich Klinghart shows that on average, mold will, mold spores will produce 600 times more mycotoxins when they're exposed to high levels of non-native EMFs. And so in terms of mitigating that, number one, your phone, like I know I see a lot of clothing brands, people at my gym, they have the built-in slot for your phone. And especially for females, I see females carrying it in their sports bras, sliding it next to their private area. That is just asking for problems. So at the very least, don't do those things. But also don't hold the cell phone up to your head. Like, people get annoyed with me because I always have it on speakerphone. I never hold it up. And so I just go to an area where, you know, it's private and I can talk. And if I can't, then I just tell the person, hey, I'll have to call you back. But those are some easy things, and unplugging your Wi-Fi router at night. So EMFs affect us more at night than during the day because of its impact on sleep. And the way that EMFs impact us, this is not like some fringe theory. I mean, this is proven hard science. There's over 273 PhD level scientists who belong to, I don't remember the name of the organization, but it's basically bringing to politicians the research showing the dangers of non-native EMFs, 5G, Wi-Fi, et cetera. And so, you know, mitigating EMFs is critical because the way they work is they operate on voltage-gated calcium channels. And it causes something called calcium efflux. And anytime, this is just kind of a general concept, when calcium floods the cell, inflammation goes way, way up. And it's called intracellular hypercalcinosis. And so when you don't have the opposing mineral, in this case, magnesium, to balance it out, so, you know, some things that can help to supplemental-wise, magnesium, potassium, even creatine monohydrate can help. And then antioxidants like vitamin C and potentially carbon 60, or the C60 that has anti-aging properties and is a potent antioxidant. There are other, so I have some of the lamb's clothing. I have a few of the shirts and some of the boxers. And that's made out of the same material that a NASA astronaut suit is made out of, because they're exposed to the equivalent of 4,000 x-rays when they're in space. Obviously, that would be very detrimental. By the way, when you go through the little terminal at the airport, that's equivalent to 30 x-rays. So opt for the pat down. The TSA agent's going to get an attitude. Well, that's too bad. It's their job. They can get over it because they're not going to pay for your medical bills if you get sick from too many EMFs. And we know that EMFs affect different systems of the body, the immune system, the endocrine system. So if you eat the same food, so we're talking about, let's just say you in this case, Dr. Lahr, you're eating a piece of fruit. So we do that. We measure your blood glucose, and it's, let's say, 110 nanograms per deciliter. And that was in a no EMF or a minimal EMF environment. Then we go to a high EMF environment the next day and have you eat the same food. Studies show that your blood sugar is going to be much higher because inflammation, I wrote about this in the Huffington Post, inflammation raises blood glucose and damages those insulin receptors and you become insulin resistant. So the lamb's clothing falls underneath the shielding category. Mm-hmm. I have on something, and again, I don't have connections to any of these companies, but it's called a Harmony pendant. And basically the concept, as it was explained to me, is that you take an incoherent wave and add another incoherent wave, and that makes a coherent wave. And so the Harmony pendant is fairly popular. I don't know the guy's name who developed it, but a lot of people in the functional medicine space say good things about it. I'm also pretty good friends with Nick Pinault, the EMF guy. And so he's in touch. Yeah. And he's in touch with the top EMF scientists. So I'll send him a product and he'll say, yeah, it's good or no, or it's okay, it's decent. I probably wouldn't invest in it. I have one of the, it looks like a tiger trap, if I'm being perfectly honest. It's from Dr. Mercola. It's the tent that you sleep in. Yes. I slept in it once. I paid like $500 for that thing. But I mean, obviously, you know, it's just not practical. I mean, I'm glad I got it in case I ever need it. Who knows if they're going to yank it off the market or something for some crazy reason. But basically products fall into one of two categories. Blocking, which sometimes, and I learned this from Nick, because I used to have my phone in a Defender Shield case. But he said what happens is the phone recognizes that the signal is being blocked and it will ramp up its output. And so I stopped doing that. And I have a, I interviewed another guy, Justin Franson, who is behind, it's called EMF Rocks. And it, he has these bags of amethyst crystals that help to mitigate EMFs. And he has these mobile Faraday bags that you can put your phone in when you're not using it. And so, and it also helps. I mean, I have to check myself fairly often because, you know, posting for my podcast and communicating with people, I can go down the rabbit hole pretty far. So I'm like, whoa, this is a good thing. I'm mitigating EMFs and I'm going to be more productive. Check, check, check. I'll do it. And so all of those things help. There are other devices that get into the tens of thousands of dollars. Obviously, for most people or a lot of people, that's not practical. But I would say, you know, distance is a really important one. And then the other thing, which you need to do this anyways, and that's detoxification in general, because the more heavy metals you have in your body, the more of a conductor of electricity you're going to be. So the way I like to explain to people who are just learning about EMFs or non-native EMFs is pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, that's altering the voltage in your cells in a positive manner. It's helping them work more efficiently. Non-native EMFs is doing the opposite.
Yeah, and actually, funny you say with the different devices, because I actually use some myself. I have from Lila Quanta, the beads that I have, and I also was at the Biohacking Congress that I presented at. I was on a panel discussion with the woman who works with VivoBase. So it's a personal device that I keep. And this one I'll keep in my purse, or I'll keep, you know, in my pocket when I'm traveling. And they've got different sizes, and it's wonderful. And I know that my sleep has, you know, improved little bits here and there, you know, with different devices, you know, getting back to sleep, being that foundational, necessary thing that we really need to heal. So seeing that, you know, we are just over the hour, did you have any, you know, take home messages from our discussion today that you'd like our audience to know, you know, those pearls of wisdom from Dr. Tim?
Yeah. So when we talk about hormones, because, you know, it's such a big topic, I'm not saying, you know, obviously it's a case by case basis. And even if you're going to do hormones, like, you know, beyond the shadow of a doubt, you need them, you're going to get much, much better results if you put, if you detoxify, because if you put hormones into a toxic body, you're not, they're not going to be metabolized properly. If your liver's congested, they can build up. And then depending on your epigenetics, like with the DNA 360 report, that, you know, you can get metabolites that promote cancer growth. Or proliferation of cancer cells. And so we want to detoxify the body. We want to optimize the terrain. We want to decrease exposure to non-native EMFs. All those things affect our genetic expression and then how we metabolize hormones as well.
Well, I would like to thank you so much for this enlightening talk today. Just so much information. I know probably a lot of people are going, oh my gosh, that's just like, where do I begin? Which is a wonderful question. And beginning is by reaching out and asking for help. So how would people reach out to you?
Yeah. So healyourbody.org. That's my website, and you can click on the button at the top that says apply to work with Dr. Tim, and then I get an email, it gets forwarded to me, and we can see if we're a good fit. I'll see and evaluate if I think I can help you based on, you know, what you tell me in the intake form, and then we can go from there. And on Instagram, it's at Dr. Tim Jackson.
Wonderful. And I would definitely encourage people to be their own self-advocates. You know, start educating yourself. Learn about your body. It is fascinating. I personally loved, you know, anatomy and physiology, and had the glorious opportunity to teach it and to teach in a cadaver lab. So I got to actually, you know, work on many different cadavers. So right there with you, and rounding off this this talk about honoring and being in awe of the incredible bodies we are living in. So take good care of it, learn, reach out for help when necessary. And I wish everyone a beautiful day, that you may continue to be on your health path to living your optimal life. So thank you again, Dr. Tim. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time to listen today. You know, we always want to make sure that the time you spend is worth your while. So take care. Bye.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.